Welcome to the April 29th, 2007 edition of From Out of the City. This is William F. DeVault, sometimes referred to as the romantic poet of the internet, sometimes just as, hey you. And I want to welcome you to this, our final broadcast of National Poetry Month 2007. I had to think long and hard about tonight's program. This month I've treated you to readings of poems by other poets who I admire, some musical compositions, and some straight-ahead readings. And while pondering this week's episode, I decided at length to do what supposedly I do best, and that is get intimate. Not in regards to erotic or romantic poetry, but in terms of my journey in poetry. Those of you who know my background know I guess I wrote my first poem when I was about 8 years old. It was called O Ship. And my third grade teacher loved it so much, it ended up being put to music. And that year at the May Day parent-teacher assembly, I and two poor sods who had to dress as sailors got to sing it from the stage. Traumatizing in some ways, and in some ways enlightening. I wrote off and on for several years until I was 17, when Joanne, a young woman I knew, caught my eye, and I wrote her a couple of romantic poems, and the emotional impact of them on her was so overwhelming, not necessarily positive, but so overwhelming and recognizably so, I realized that I had a knack for this. Something my teachers had already told me, but I really wasn't going to accept it till I saw some empirical evidence, and there it was. For the next several years, I wrote. Sometimes it won me friends, sometimes it won me the attention of women, and sometimes it won me trouble. The first woman I was ever in love with enough to marry, our relationship disintegrated when, after about 5 years together, she said to me, I wish you'd give up this poetry thing, because poetry will never be commercial. Poetry will never be accepted as it once was. And you will grow old and bitter. And I don't know if I can watch the man I love grow old and bitter. So I thought upon it for a few weeks and then called her up one night and said, let's call off the engagement. And it was one of the most difficult things I've ever done in this life. But I had to make my stand, I had to make my choice, because by that time I had come to realize that I didn't write poetry. I was a poet. And this gift or this disease, however you view it, had taken me over. Or perhaps I had taken it over. I don't know which. But that's where the journey really began in earnest. And with the advent of the internet, I was rapidly taken into the bosom by the Writers Club on America Online. It was a great group of people. I met some rather well-known authors and some wannabes and some people who were on their way up and some people who were on their way down. And one of them was The Panther, for whom The Panther Cycles was written. And right after my divorce from my first wife, not the woman I'd broken up with over poetry, but the mother of my three children and the inspiration behind such poems as Opportunity and Icarus, I moved to L.A., and one of the first things I did was I built a website. And this was at a time when not everybody had a website. And I gave it over to all the indexes and search engines. And 2 weeks later, Yahoo adds me to their listings, which at the time were straight-up indexes, not the kind of generic everything goes in that we have today. And they listed me as the romantic poet of the internet. And an old marketing buddy of mine said, never waste a good sobriquet. So I took it and I kept it. And my website, which was originally on Earthlink, called The City of Legends, I kept it for several years until I was being harassed by a writer in L.A. who was extremely opposed to the Church of Scientology. And the founder of Earthlink was involved with the Church of Scientology. This writer took it upon himself to take the position that since I had a site on Earthlink, I must be a Scientologist. Well, I'm not. Indeed, I have spoken out against the quote-unquote Church of Scientology in the past, although I have friends who are in it, and I respect them as people. I just don't respect the organization. But anyway, this gentleman's harassment of me became so annoying, I just said, to heck with it, and bought the name cityoflegends.com, and that's where my website's been. So for about the last 10 years, the City of Legends has been my website, and there have been millions of visitors, and if you've never been to it, you should go to it. But my reputation grew while I was in L.A., and I started doing the first of my modern reads. I'd done a few reads when I was a young man and didn't like the experience because I don't trust the integrity of the audience. I don't like an audience that patronizes, that applauds just because you happen to be on stage. And unfortunately, at most poetry readings, that's how it is, because the vast majority of your audience are other poets who are getting ready to get on the stage, and they're not going to criticize you because they don't want to be criticized. So I started reading in unusual venues, sports bars and rock clubs and places like that. And I found it very liberating because if you got booed out of the place, that was to be expected. And if you won over one person, that was like being an apostle bringing somebody to God. Because to me, poetry is a religion. It's the way I connect with the divine in me and in the world. When young people approach me to have me mentor them on poetry, one of the first questions I ask them, that I've always asked them, is, for you, is poetry a hobby, a job, a career, an obsession, or a religion? And if it's anything short of obsession or religion, I don't take them. I don't want people who want to write a poem. I want people who want to be a poet. And that's something that's like being in love. You feel it down to your socks. You know it. It's faith. It's truth. It's belief. It's not just you took a class and you know how to write a haiku. It's that you have that ability, whether born in or learned. As a friend of mine used to say, born in or burned in, to take the essence of your experience, your soul, your intellect, and put it to the page. It is critical to the poet. And I've met a lot of people in my travels, coast to coast, who write poetry. I've met a handful of poets. And there's nothing wrong with not being a poet. Now, we need things other than poets in the world. But we also need poets. Poets reveal to us and express to us and confide in us and connect with us in ways that nobody else does. It's like, yeah, people have dogs and cats, but there are also people who have fish and birds. A pet owner who has a fish or a bird is not inferior to a pet owner who has a dog and a cat. They just have a different thing going for them. And the fish or the bird brings a different thing to the mix than a dog or a cat. Big deal. Poetry isn't for everybody. Not everybody can grasp it. It's like opera. You know, you're either born with the ability to understand and appreciate and connect with opera, or you can learn to appreciate it. But no one should force it down your throat. No one should come to believe that it is so essential that everyone must love it. That's not my place. And believe me, I'm one of the real poetry evangelicals out there. But anyway, after my time in LA and my remarriage, I moved around a bit more. Starting in LA, I started putting out those books finally. I now have 9 that are out, and I have more on the way. And it's been an interesting ride, an interesting trip. I've enjoyed it immensely. So people ask me when I'm going to retire as a poet, and the answer is I'm not. I will always write. It's how I keep myself sane. It's how I connect to my God. It's how I connect to the world. It's how I express myself. A more legitimate question would be, when are you going to stop breathing or eating? Probably about the same time I stop being a poet, because those occurrences would be fairly synonymous. It's 2007. And I'm not at the high point of my life in terms of my social interactions or my circle of friends or my love life or my finances. But every day, I feel stronger and more sure of myself as a poet. Yeah, there are days I have doubt. But poetry is who I am. My editor and friend Jan Innes said that her ex-husband once read one of my books and said, "My God, this guy doesn't write poetry, this guy lives poetry." He's right. For better or for worse, it's what I am. Does it sometimes make me ill-equipped to live in the world of humans? Probably. But it's who and what I am. I don't compromise my poetry. I've compromised almost everything else in my life at one time or another, but I don't compromise my poetry. You read my poetry, you meet me. Not a facade put on to get through the day, but you meet me. And when I read my poetry, I meet somebody who sometimes I'm a little intimidated by, but I like and I respect. And that's important, because we all want to like and respect ourselves. Well, didn't want to keep you too long. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to read a poem and then let you get on with your life. And hopefully next week or the week after, I'll be doing my next show. Sometimes I skip a week. Sometimes I skip 2 weeks, but I'm trying not to do that anymore. I'm trying to be diligent. The poem I'm going to do tonight is called Return to the Cliffs. I wrote this in the aftermath of my second divorce a long time ago. Barbara Holmes, a writer who has twice profiled me for national magazines, said to someone that one thing she noticed about me is I wasn't the kind of person to climb the rocks. I was the kind of person who ran the cliffs, jumping from rock to rock, daring gravity to throw me down. Some would say that means there's something wrong with me. I think it's just that I find joy in life, and I accept the fact that once in a while I am going to fall. I think that too many people lead lives of quiet desperation. And poets can't be quiet. So anyway, without further ado, here is the poem, Return to the Cliffs. In the strangest way, I have missed these heights of silence and darkness, these long, bitter nights. I've missed the rough edges of the rocks in the sky, where fingertip margins ascertain who will die. Where the wind whistles freely and the echoes are pure, where the ground waits impatient for grave gravity's cure. I can still see the ledges where I last dared dance, on the face of the mountain, in the mad poet's trance. I ascend by the moment to return to my nest on the hills of temptation where the sun knows me best, where the moon has so often played a hide-and-seek game with the shrubs and the grasses and the cliff runner's name. For the nonce I will linger in my home in the hills to return to my dances to test again my thin skills and to issue dispatches in ink, light, and sweat that record every moment of hope and regret. Happy National Poetry Month. This is William F. Duvall, wishing you great joy and much poetry. God bless.